This episode is brought to you by the Arvada Center, because they're kicking off their summer concert series in June. Relax under the stars at the Arvada Center's outdoor amphitheater and take in acts like Melissa Etheridge, Big Richard, Tower of Power, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, The Spin Doctors, and so much more. Concerts are scheduled for June through September. You can find a whole schedule of events and get your tickets today at arvadacenter.org. That's arvadacenter.org. Today on CityCast Denver. You know those flashing signs over I-70 that say stuff like, don't be a stinker, use your blinker? Are they too funny? Me and producer Paul Caroli are talking about why the feds seem to think so. Plus, a new historic preservation fight brewing in Park Hill, and your hot takes on the best meat-free eats in town. Today is Tuesday, January 23rd. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. Hi, Paul.
Hey, good morning, Bree. Let's get right into the news. We got a lot to talk about today. And this first story is such a doozy. It's a topic I know, you know, both of us get really riled up about, historic preservation. This latest fight comes to us in a story from Business Den. It's a debate that's going in front of the Landmark Preservation Commission today, Tuesday, whether or not to forward to City Council a petition from some Park Hill neighbors to block the planned demolition of the home at 5013 East Montview Avenue, and in doing so, dub it a historic landmark.
Yeah. I mean, look, you saw the pictures of it, Paul. It's pretty dilapidated to begin with.
I mean, it didn't look special.
Great. That doesn't mean that it's not unique. However, there is not seemingly a very strong argument to save this house.
Oh,
as far as I can tell, the case for preservation that folks have put forward. And again, this is what the Landmark Commission does not like us to call it a hostile designation, but sometimes it's sort of interpreted that way. It's when someone who doesn't own the home wants to preserve it. So they put forth a case to say this needs to go before the Landmark Preservation.
And it might, people might say it's hostile because it's blocking the owner from doing what they want to do with their house.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And so the folks that put forward this request for the designation say the previous occupants are of note. The previous occupant, I think the original owner, was Harry Huffman, who was a movie theater owner, who later built a more famous and interesting house in Hilltop called the Shangri-La Mansion. I'll find a picture of it and put a link in our show notes. It is definitely a beautiful house, and I could see a case for preserving that. But the fact that this sort of man is adjacent to this house and owned it at some time feels like a stretch.
It feels flimsy. Can you imagine, though, being so important that after you die, people are like, that apartment she lived in for 6 months in New York, we have to save that forever.
I actually read about a case similar to this in L.A., a Bukowski bungalow.
Charles Bukowski?
Yeah, that he had rented or something and people tried to save it, and it was this whole big thing. And
it's interesting to me.
It's like, if it wasn't their childhood home, or like, I don't know. It feels, in general, that criteria always feels like a stretch to me.
You know, I find myself like almost always being like against these preservation requests, just because like, it seems rare that there should be something so important that we keep. But ever since we talked about that Richard Crowther house during our Cherry Creek week, that house was so ugly to me. But then once I learned about it after it was demolished, like, it was kind of devastating. That was a special place.
It really was. It really was. And Richard Crowther, the thing that I struggled with was that house was ugly. For
sure.
Super
ugly.
But some of his other work is some of my favorite work in the city. He's done the ticket booths. He did sort of the remodel of Lakeside. And so, but what was interesting though was in spring of last year, council voted 10-1 to landmark a home against the owner's wishes.
Okay.
So there was an architecturally significant case for this other house. And when you, I'll put a link to that. This was a city park house. If you saw that house versus the house we're talking about now, I think you might see, okay, there's definitely a case. It was a much more beautiful house that was defined architecturally. I would not say this house is one of those.
What do we know about the family? You know, because so here's the detail that jumped out to me from Business Den. 68 people, I guess, have emailed city officials opposing the preservation effort and supporting demolition.
Yeah.
What do we know about their case, that side of it?
I mean, this family already lives in the neighborhood. They purchased this house and the property in, I think, with the intent to demolish it and build something else to stay in their neighborhood. And their argument is there's mold, cracks, and other issues that have rendered the property uninhabitable. And the family has gotten a contractor to look it over and says this could be a $2 to $3 million fix just to fix the current issues with the structure.
Oof.
And so again, this is like one of those situations where it's like, oh no, poor rich people. How sad. Mm-hmm. But I think folks are supporting, it seems to me that these folks are just supporting their neighbors and wanting to build a house in their neighborhood is what it seems like to me. They didn't say much about
what new investment, maybe like get rid of an eyesore if it is
dilapidated. I'm wondering that too, is like, is it just been sitting there for a long time? However, some folks in the preservation world would argue this does happen a lot where a developer buys a house, the tenants move out, and then it sits there for years and becomes dilapidated and uninhabitable. So I don't know how long this house was sitting there. I know these folks purchased it from a family who'd owned it for 60 years. And so it had been inhabited for a long time. But it just sounds like it's in need of a lot of work, and the neighborhood, for the most part, wants to support this family in demolishing it and building something else.
So the other thing we normally talk about with these historic preservation battles is like the density debate, like demolishing the single family home and maybe building townhouses or like multiple units. Is that the case here?
No.
So that's irrelevant to this.
Wouldn't that be lovely?
Debate.
Wouldn't that be lovely?
That would fit into a narrative for sure.
I mean, to me, that was one of the turning points for me in the preservation mindset. Was I was heavily pro-preservation early on, I don't know, probably 10 or 15 years when I got more interested in this subject. And I still am interested in preservation, but that argument made me think it is important sometimes to tear down these buildings if we can build more housing. Unfortunately, in this kind of situation, that's not what's happening at all. It's
they
a small family of four that wants to build a giant mansion.
A nicer, yeah.
Which, you know what, if I had the money too, I'd probably want to build a giant mansion as well. So the sympathy is low for me on that end. However, I don't see the importance of this home would be the end result to me.
Right. But it's not up to us. It's up to the Landmark Preservation Commission. Like I said, they're voting today, Tuesday, January 22nd. They could forward it to City Council, but they don't have to. What do you think is going to happen?
I don't think that there's a strong case to save this house. And I would think that one of the arguments here is there hasn't been enough research done by the folks that put up this landmark request. So it's like they don't have a strong case. So I would be surprised if it moves on to City Council.
Right. Yeah, that seems like a way to say like you didn't find enough good reasons.
Yeah, and like this, the connection to somebody in the community of note is a stretch. And this, I think the current owners have said like, okay, this, what is the style they say it is? Italian Renaissance Revival is what it says the style of house. I think the family that owns it is like, well, the roof looks like that, but the rest of it's not really of note. So
interesting.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
We'll see. I guess we'll update folks later on in the week after that vote.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Our next story is about humor and the highway.
Two great tastes that go great together.
For some people. I don't know.
Better than the alternative.
What, of negativity?
Road rage, getting angry.
But maybe this would incite road rage?
Maybe.
In some people? I don't know. Axios Denver reported last week that the Federal Highway Administration is implementing these new rules blocking signs over highways with, quote, pop culture references, humor, or anything that might be misunderstood or understood only by a limited segment of road users and require greater time to process and understand. What is going on with this, Paul?
It's such a fun thing. I thought this was just a Colorado thing.
Oh.
When I was looking into this, I learned apparently like all over the country, different states do this. All of them are kind of like getting on this use jokes to get across safety messages, this whole train. But anyway, the Denver Post reported in 2018 that CDOT, Colorado Department of Transportation, has been doing this since 2015, when there was a big spike in road fatalities. Their traffic safety community communications manager, Sam Cole, who's been widely lauded for his work with jokes, started using humor in these messages. So that's why we have things on these signs over I-70 that say stuff like, get your head out of your apps, or here's Cole's personal favorite, who you gonna call? No one, you're driving.
I get it now. Like, yeah. Ghostbusters. Okay.
Yeah, maybe that was topical at if the reboot was coming out or something. Ghostbusters reboot.
Yeah, maybe. I was like, because otherwise, that's a real dated reference.
Yeah, which is kind of part of the issue here. Like, for some people, that's going to be hilarious because they'll think about Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray, and for other people, young people perhaps, they'll think, "What the hell am I supposed to think about that sign?"
Right. And it is very contextual to the person reading it, what the context is for them. And I love good humor. I love cheesy humor. I love corny. I love bumper sticker humor. I don't love these, to be honest with you. No, they feel a little bit they incite distracted driving.
Interesting.
Because like you're trying to read something really fast and you're like, is this an important message, like an Amber Alert or like an avalanche alert or something? Oh no, it's just get your head out of your apps.
I feel like sometimes I agree with you. Because here Axios Denver reported on this. They had a list of their favorites. There's some of these that I think are like good, simple, like around Thanksgiving, there was one that CDOT used, gobble, gobble, easy on the throttle. You know, I know what that means.
I guess.
It's not funny.
No.
It's not funny at all.
No. Also, like, I'm not driving a rocket ship. I'm driving true. A You're Subaru. Not,
there's no throttle.
There's no throttle in my Honda CRV.
Cats have nine, you have one, buckle up.
Yeah.
That requires a level of abstraction, you know, nine what? One what? Lives, you know? You have to take a second to make the connection.
Camp in the mountains, not in the left lane. I like it in theory. I don't know how many people think or use that terminology.
To camp in the left lane?
Yeah. I understand what they're saying is like, don't drive slow in the left lane.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't
use that word in conversation.
No, to me, that's a restaurant word, honestly. When I worked in a restaurant, I'd be like, oh, table five is camping all night. So I'll be here till 10 with my one table. It's going to tip me $3. I don't know about someone driving slow. So it's so hyper-specific to the driver.
Yeah.
And I think about all the other things on the road we're trying to be paying attention to. I was driving on Colfax the other day, mm-hmm. and it was green light for a long time. And by the time I come up to the crosswalk, there's a man walking, looking at his iPad. I missed him by like... And I thought, oh my God, I would have hit a driver. But it's like, these are the kinds of things we're trying to, pedestrian. These are the kinds of things we're trying to pay attention to. And that's why I find these signs just like not helpful.
Yeah.
So, but what was the response to these sort of new rules or at least recommendations for what to put on a sign?
Well, apparently people all over the country love their funny signs because at least according to the Washington Post, there was outcry and complaints from everybody, from departments of transportation, from regular folks. You know, everyone has like seen one of these go viral and laughed about it on the internet. But yeah, anyway, and even from our own CDOT, our transportation director, Shoshana Liu, told Axios Denver, Washington sure knows how to take the fun out of funding. Which she slipped a pun even in here. Kidding aside, we think a little levity can help get important messages across, especially in tough weather conditions and while we fix our roads and bridges.
So have you ever been driving and the sign is, it's got so much information on it, it has to change?
Mm-hmm.
I find myself slowing down to try to make sure I can see the whole length of the sign.
Yeah, same.
That's why I feel like... that's what I'm paying attention to. I'm really hoping I get some pertinent information about the road from it, not a joke that alludes to a Christmas story.
A Christmas story, that's definitely one of them. I mean, people have done a Fragile thing. I don't know that movie. But I guess like CDOT themselves have admitted that they've changed their approach to these jokes. So here's a quote from Cole, who I mentioned earlier. Cole admitted that he might have gone overboard in previous years. Younger people probably understood one sign's use of YOLO to mean you only live once, but the phrase might have escaped older generations. Like we kind of talked about, you know, different audiences. This, that's, you know, humor is contextual.
Humor, and slang, it's very age specific.
And I guess CDOT, I guess, has a rule against pop culture references. Other states do that a lot, but they don't do that here anymore. After this outcry, the Washington Post reported last week that the FAA claims to have been totally misunderstood. This was not ever intended to be a ban on humor on highways.
Oh.
This new edition of their rules doesn't include a ban on humor or pop culture references on changeable message signs, an administration spokesperson said in an email. Rather, it includes a recommendation to avoid the use of humor and pop culture references in changeable message signs that may confuse or distract drivers.
So they're saying the hammer coming down. We were just recommending that maybe think deeper about what you're putting on your sign.
Yeah, which is like basically saying, keep doing it, I think. Try to be better at it. How do you even tell transportation officials, be funnier, be better at it? That's
also
what this whole thing is about.
I don't need you to be funny. I need you to be boring and be good at your job, which is like making the road safer for people. Yeah. And this to me does not do that. Also, have you ever seen a road sign that's clearly been hacked?
No.
Oh my God. It was during UMS, 10, maybe not even that long ago. Someone hacked a construction sign that would be usually they say lock your valuables in your car or whatever to prevent car thefts. They'll park those signs around the city. Someone hacked into it and changed it to an eastbound and down reference that it just read tight dick player. It was on a street, a CDOT construction sign on Broadway for a whole night. So sometimes, all that to say, sometimes I see these signs and I'm like, did they get hacked?
That's hilarious.
Is someone controlling this? It's not supposed to be.
I would not have gotten that reference. That would have been distracting
to
me.
I had to Google it. No, I had to. I didn't know what it was either, but I had to Google it. And then I watched it and I was like, oh, this. Now I want to watch this show. So whoever did this, good job. But yeah, it's very hyper-specific. I guess this gets back though to the question of what the point of the signs are in general, which is to convey information to drivers. Mm-hmm. Do these signs work?
Do they work? That's a hard question. The Washington Post talked to some researchers. They talked to people behind a couple of studies, and it was totally mixed. So one study was some scientists looked at brainwave monitoring of people looking at these signs, and which sounds like a fun study to be a part of.
It does.
Is this sign funny or not? And that said that the people were more engaged due to the humor of the sign.
Engaged in the road?
Engaged in the sign, I think.
Okay.
So they were saying the sign worked better. But then the National Academy of Sciences' own Transportation Research Board did their own study, and they concluded the opposite. They said that it would actually be better if these signs didn't have any, they weren't funny or had pop culture references.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're talking about distracted driving is this huge issue.
Yeah.
Drive down any road, you see people looking down at their crotches the whole time because they're looking at their phones. So doesn't this just create a similar scenario?
Well, I did look at the data. I mean, remember we talked about this starting in 2015. CDOT started because of a spike in traffic fatalities. So here's the data since then. Traffic fatalities have continued to trend up. With an exception, this is across the state, with an exception of the pandemic year 2020 and 2021, but it's been pretty much up since 2010 when there was 411 traffic fatalities. 2022 was the high water point for this, 699 traffic fatalities across the state.
Oh,
last year, it actually went down to 577, so maybe they're getting funnier.
I
don't know.
I can just hear our beloved transit freaks in our audience going, are you kidding me? We're adding one more thing to distract a driver. I think about, you're a cyclist, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want someone on the road reading a hilarious reference? I remember I saw one that was road rage, be like Elsa, let it go. They're looking at that instead of looking at you
Yeah, maybe the sign is too engaging.
Kinda.
Maybe.
I think so. So
it's an interesting issue.
It is a really interesting issue. I want to hear hot takes. I want people's hot takes.
I do too. If you've got a strong opinion, one way or the other on this, if you love the funny signs, if you hate the funny signs, personally, I feel like no one can be that funny and that precise consistently. A low level of non-distraction worthy funniness.
Unless you have comedians there working for you. But if you can call into our CDOT Comedy Hour hotline at 720-500-5418. Let us know what you think about supposed to be funny highway signs. Are they funny? Are they effective? Are they dangerous? Do you want to be writing better ones? Let us know. 720-500-5418. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we hear from you, our dear listeners. This episode is brought to you by Pine Melon, the farmer's market delivered. Pine Melon is a next generation grocery delivery app that partners with over 200 farmers, ranchers, and producers in Colorado to help make fresh, locally sourced foods available to the Denver community at fair prices. Get high quality meats, eggs, and dairy from small local farms, fresh baked breads from local bakeries, and more, as well as all of your favorite pantry staples. Best part is, Pine Melon offers same-day delivery to Denver and soon Boulder within a two-hour window, no subscription necessary. Save time in your busy schedule and get fresh and healthy groceries delivered right to your door. Join the movement and support local today. Use promo code CityCastDenver for $75 off your first delivery at pinemelon.com. That's pinemelon.com.
And we're back. As we do every Tuesday, we like to end the show with listener comments and questions because you all are brilliant and hilarious listeners, you know, always have interesting stuff to say. So we got a few voicemails, we got a few comments. I think mostly this time they're going to be about that meat-free, that vegetarian vegan episode we did last week with our friend of the show, Brooke Garcia, and Native Foods owner, Michael Olivas.
Well, Paul, you were asking for it.
And I got it. We got a ton of great feedback.
No, I mean, I'm joking, but we did. But I just want to say prior to this, we got a lot of requests for folks asking us to talk about good vegetarian food around the city. And so this was not just out of nowhere. We heard from you, our listeners. Give us some recommendations. Tell us what you think. And Paul went out and found two experts. And Paul himself, a wishy-washy vegetarian.
No. I've been reducitarian.
Yeah, reducitarian.
That's what I'm calling myself
now. You're right.
Now.
You've been very pragmatic about it. I want to be fair. You have not been like, you're not a high horse person about it. And you've not been like, oh, I'm off the wagon. You're just like, I'm trying to figure out what's going on in this world. Here's how I'm going to start it. So you, the reducitarian, joined a pescatarian and a vegetarian?
A vegan and a vegetarian, I think is how they would identify.
Okay, we got a voicemail.
Hi, guys. I just listened to your vegetarian vegan episode. And the one I love right now is in Highlands Ranch, total vegan Indian restaurant. I go with vegan and non-vegan friends, and it's delicious.
Total vegan, never heard of it. Thank you for the recommendation. I'm writing this one down.
I will also say, thank you, listener. We don't really give Highlands Ranch any attention, if at any at all. And so I would have never heard of this place.
Yeah.
And I have to say, the name Total Vegan Indian Restaurant does not feel like somewhere you want to take your non-vegan friends, but from our listener, it sounds like this is that place.
Hi, this is Anne. I live in Northeast Park Hill, and I just listened to the episode about vegan and vegetarian restaurants, and I was surprised you left off Wellness Sushi. It's a sushi restaurant that's all vegan. It's right by the Tattered Cover, and I just thought you might want to check it out. Thanks.
We have briefly talked about Wellness Sushi. I've been there a couple of times. Have you been there, Bree?
I have to say it does not sound appetizing to me.
Yeah, I think sushi without fish, I mean, it's like rolls of like vegetables and fruit and stuff and rice.
Which I think is great. I'm glad it exists. I eat sushi because I want to eat raw fish. So
yeah.
I'm not really the target market for this. But what's interesting is Wellness Sushi is one of those local companies that did a crowdfunding campaign to expand, and they've done so. So they're clearly
popular.
Yeah,
they seem to be doing well. Personally, I think that place is good, not great.
Okay.
I feel like the rolls are too big. The radius is too big.
That
could be tighter.
Okay.
A little more focused on some of those rolls. That's my critique, but I generally think it's quite good.
Okay, good rec. Good rec. What else do we have?
Hi, this is Alex from Clayton. I was calling to recommend another vegan restaurant, Somebody People. I was expecting the whole time during the episode for somebody to bring it up. It's amazing. We took my mother-in-law when she was visiting there, and she has allergies to pork, and she was just so excited with everything that we had. So yeah, I would definitely check it out. Thanks.
Somebody People.
This is the big one.
Paul,
lots of people wrote in about Somebody People.
But you've not thought favorably about it. However, you went and revisited Somebody People.
Yes, I went once before,
this
maybe a year or two ago, around, I don't know when they opened, a few years ago. But I didn't have a great time. So that's why I didn't talk about it. I haven't talked about it. So after this deluge of feedback, including from our friend of the show, Ian Silveri, who wrote in to encourage me to revisit Somebody People, I did. My wife and I went on Friday night.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, Brie.
What?
I hated it.
Oh.
Again. Again, I hated it.
Do you hate the food?
The food, the ambiance is like neon lights. It's very like pinks and greens. It's like millennial, or it's like, I don't know, like that Gen Z green and pink. It's inspired by David Bowie. They have a cool David Bowie mural in the bathroom.
I was guessing by the Somebody People, which is a lyric from, oh my God, Modern. I don't know. Oh my God. Don't at me. It's not from Soul.
Wow, I'm surprised. I thought you'd have this top of your mind.
It's from my favorite. It's from Ziggy Stardust, too. Oh, 5 years. Duh. It's like the opening track. It's from 5 years. Anyway, yes, I asked you. I was like, is this a David Bowie themed place? Mm-hmm. You're like, absolutely. But that ambiance doesn't really do anything for you.
No. I mean, okay. It was fine, but it was just the food. It's too expensive. It costs like $100 for Megan and I to get like four dishes, and they're all very small. They call them like small plates.
Oh,
but it's like
it's the tapas grift.
But here's the real problem with this place. Every single dish, the primary flavor is sourness.
Oh.
They love sourness. The bread, sourdough. The roasted broccoli, sour. The beets, they had this sour, creamy white sauce, and it must have been like canned beets. There was no texture. It was so not fun.
So not a good balance. There's not enough of a balance of different flavors.
No balance.
Okay.
No balance. Okay. I hate to be negative about a restaurant like this. I know I'm in the minority here. I know a lot of other people in this vegan, vegetarian, reducitarian community love this place. I'm glad that it's here and it's making people happy. But for me, Somebody People, I am never going back.
Brutal.
Sorry to say it.
I'm still going to go because I'm going to investigate the David Bowie-ness of this space.
Maybe there's references that I miss. The mural is good.
He's, you know, he's very deep artist. Anyway, okay, well, interesting. But we have one more note from a listener to that.
Yeah, can I read this one?
I want you to. I'm offended. I'm hurt by this comment, and I wasn't even on this show.
All right, so I just dragged Somebody People a little bit, but then this person comes, so gives us a little bit of that
levity
back. But I loved it. So Mike from Westwash Park here, loved the show most days, but the episode on vegetarian food in Denver, two quote unquote experts, and the best you could do was salty oh salty and vegan van. Did you forget you had a show to do and then checked TripAdvisor 5 minutes before hitting the record button?
Oh my God, Mike does not understand the neuroticness that goes into some of our shows where you think so deeply about us doing them that we talk about them for months, Paul.
Truly, truly. I mean, yeah. I mean, my recommendations, I put my whole heart behind those.
I know.
I got to say, I hadn't heard Salty O Salty before for City O City. That's pretty funny.
I will be with Mike a little bit on this one. I go there, I struggle. I struggle with a lot of things about that place. More, mm-hmm. It's more about the attitude when you walk in and they're like, why are you bothering to come in here?
Or perhaps the service fees, the ever-changing service fees
the
situation.
The confusing tip on top of a tip on top of a tip. But the salty thing does ring true. I haven't had Vegan Van, although I've heard wonderful things about it, but he's saying there's more out there that the TripAdvisor.
Well, we got a few more recs from listeners here. With Somebody People you'll probably like. You know, I didn't like it, but maybe you will. A lot of other people do.
Have you been to Cholo Ass Vegan?
No, not yet.
I haven't either.
I follow them on Instagram.
Heard they're amazing.
Yeah, same.
Heard they're amazing. Well, we're always taking your recommendations for anything, especially if I know there's more vegetarian restaurants out there, but you can give us a call at 720-500-5418 and let us know that Paul's wrong again about Somebody People. I'm kidding. No, Maybe let us know what your favorite places are that didn't get mentioned or that are what I loved. I just want to go back to this comment from our listener that she likes Somebody People for someone that had pork allergies.
Mm.
It's not somebody you're thinking about who's like, they're not necessarily a vegetarian. They're looking for things without things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also a helpful tip when you're, you know, maybe you're a gluten person or, you know, you're a pork person. So I don't know. This has been interesting. I'm glad we got such fiery feedback, though, I have to say.
Me too.
We appreciate it.
It was fun.
It was so great.
Especially you, Mike, from Westwash Park. Shout out to you, Mike. Thanks for bringing the fire.
But Mike, tell us where you want to go.
Agreed.
Where should we go, Mike? Let us know. Especially in Wash Park. What are the options? I have no idea. Okay, well, this has been enlightening, as usual. Thanks, Paul.
See you next time, Brie.
That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed this show, why not take a minute to tell CDOT's top comic Sam Cole about us? Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to our morning newsletter and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. Bye-bye.